Aloha, everybody, and welcome to episode 20X of the Game Plan Podcast from Gamers-Association.com. That is right, episode 20X. And that's because this is not a proper episode. I'll let you know right now. If you were not aware, this past weekend was PAX Prime out in Seattle, a big four-day event, longest it's ever been. I was there a couple extra days, hanging out in Seattle, checking out games, lots and lots of fun. But because of that, because of my involvement with all the stuff going around with that, we did not get a chance to podcast this weekend. Now that I'm back, just got back last night, but now that I'm back, it looks like I'm going to be going out of town this weekend as well. So we won't be able to get a new podcast out for you guys. And I was like, you know, we got loyal listeners here. We have people that want to listen to us talk about video games. Dang it, I'm not going to make them wait 3 weeks between podcasts. That's far too long. So I was just going to throw this little thing together, give you guys a PAX Prime recap on everything that I saw out there. So as usual, I'm your host, Luke Frazier. Don't know if I said that yet. But this is just going to be me spitballing. But there's going to be previews. I'm going to do mini previews because I saw so much stuff. I was the only one from this site that was able to really get out there and preview a lot of stuff. So I just tried to get my hands at as much stuff as I can. Turns out in 4 days, there's a lot of stuff to get your hands on. So I'm just going to be throwing up a bunch of short form previews on the site in the next couple of days. Of course, like I said, Friday through Sunday, I'm going to be out of town and not connected to the internet and whatever. But I am going to try to get a bunch of previews up. But before that happens, thought I'd give you guys a quick recap. Now, for this podcast, if it's not blatantly aware, it's just like every other podcast we've done. There's not like a note sheet that I'm going to be following. I haven't, you know, reviewed any of my notes from the show because I want to give you guys not everything, but just the stuff that's fresh in my mind, just the stuff that stood out to me most from the show. So let's get right into it, huh? PAX Prime 2013. Cue the music. And we're back. So the cool thing about being press, getting press access to the show, was we got to get into the show 1 hour on the first day before the regulars, right? The people with just passes and stuff. And that's really like pretty much the only perk other than like being able to make appointments and stuff. But it was cool because that means I got my hands on stuff that usually had a huge line behind them. So the first thing I did when I got there, just walking around getting my bearings, and all of a sudden I came across a game on the PlayStation 4 with that new controller. That was something I really wanted to do at the show, get my hands on one of those. I was playing this game called Contrast, which I didn't really spend a lot of time with, so I'm not really going to preview it because, you know, it was during this exclusive hour for press, so like I said, I wanted to try to get to as many things as I could. But I just wanted to get a feel of this controller, ended up using it for this new game called Contrast, for Knack, and for Blacklight Retribution on PlayStation 4 as well, a free-to-play game on PC that's going to be free-to-play on PlayStation 4, I believe, on release day. Anyway, man, do I love this thing. It's everything that you know, the other press guys have been telling you, all the improvements. And one of the reasons I really wanted to get my hands on it is because I did not like the PlayStation 3 controller really at all. Coming from someone who loved their PS2 very, very, very much. Coming to PS3, especially in those early days when there was no DualShock, it was just 6-axis, felt like the thing felt cheap and light, and the L2R2s sucked, and I hated using any 6-axis controls. I still do. I've hated them completely. Except in Flower, that was pretty pretty. But anyway, hated it. So I've always used, you know, L1, R1 for you know, looking down my sights and shooting and in first-person shooters and the like, yeah, even though I don't play too many of them. But actually playing a shooter here, it was great because then I got to get the feel of it, and it was automatic. There was no question on where I should place my fingers. Like proper triggers should be, I went for that L2R2, and it felt great. I've never felt so confident, I guess, in the mechanics of a shooting game before. I've never really, really got into, like, an Xbox 360 set up enough to really get comfortable with that controller, but at least from a PlayStation side, this thing feels so much better. The analog sticks as well feel so much tighter. It seems like there's a lot more precision that can be had there, and that's only amplified by the concave nature of the sticks. You're not your fingers aren't slipping off there and stuff, which I never thought my fingers slipped before either. But once you get your hands in this thing, you never want to go back. And that's kind of how I felt when I'd go and I'd play, you know, like Diablo 3 on PS3 or The Puppeteer or something like that. I was just like, oh, this controller feels terrible. I want my PS4 one back. But anyway, yeah, and then it kind of got a little bit of that rubber grip business on the back too. So it just feels like a good controller to hold. It's got a nice weight to it. I love the thing. I wish I could buy one and hook it up for my PS3, because I would right now. Didn't get to mess with any of the real system-level features of it. The games that I played were not using the touchpad, for instance. I've heard a lot of games are going to be using that for, like, menu interfaces or you know, messing with maps. I think the new Infamous is going to have that implemented in some of the gameplay elements, which may or may not be a very good or bad thing. But I never got to touch that. I never got to use the share button. Never got to get into the nitty gritty. Just the games. But man, from just a controller standpoint, it was great. Some things I didn't cover before we really get into specific games, and this is for a couple reasons. I did not play, despite recommendations, I did not get my hands on Infamous or Watch Dogs. Notably because nobody did. Both Infamous and Watch Dogs, Infamous not being out till February, so I understand this, but Watch Dogs is coming out very, very soon, even on current-gen hardware. So both of these games were behind big walls in very long lines of like 2 hours all the time, over the 4 days. And I wasn't going to wait in these lines, especially after I heard that none of these games are playable. Not only that, but they're both being shown for live demos, I believe, but both of these demos were pretty much the same thing we've already seen, so I didn't want to wait 2 hours to check out game footage that you can find by going on YouTube and entering Infamous Second Son or Watch Dogs. You know, it's the same crap we've been seeing all the time, so I didn't want to waste my time with that, especially when, you know, even in 4 days, there's a lot to see. So I didn't get to see that. Did get to see Titanfall, which is what every single person in the world is saying is the best thing ever, partially because I don't like shooters, but mostly because, again, like everything else, lines were insane. Lines were massive all the time because everybody was talking about it. But, you know, enough people have talked about Titanfall. It's going to be really good. Look any other place on the internet and you'll find a Titanfall preview that praises it. So you don't need my word to tell you to buy Titanfall. If you like shooters, you like that stuff, it's going to be great. The final thing I didn't get my hands on was an Oculus Rift. Again, line reasons. A couple indie dudes had an Oculus, but for the main Oculus showing, which is, geez, it was something I really wanted to try, but it was a thing where you had to be in the right place at the right time. They would actually cap the line and tell you that nobody could line up until, you know, every 15 minutes you could check back and see if you could get a place in line, and I was too busy, and I didn't want to sit around and wait for a spot in line to open up, and then wait an hour or two for my just to get my eyes on something. So yeah, I didn't get to see Oculus, but some stuff that I did get to see, some stuff that you guys are actually caring about, and I should stop rambling about what I didn't see. So let's get into the stuff I did see. One of the first things I got to, one of the things that I went to because I figured it would have a very long line later on, Elder Scrolls Online. Now, if you've listened to me on the podcast before, you're probably aware that I don't like Elder Scrolls games, but I've played them. I've played Oblivion, I've played Morrowind, I've played other Bethesda RPGs like the Fallout series, and while I don't like them, I know how they're supposed to feel. And this felt like a damn Elder Scrolls game, baby. It was great. And I, for coming from somebody that doesn't like Elder Scrolls games, I think that's probably a good thing, that even I like it. It does definitely feels like an Elder Scrolls game. By default, they did not have it in first-person perspective. However, I felt that the game felt a lot more natural in third person than the other Elder Scrolls games do. The movements of the players look a lot more natural than I think they do in other Elder Scrolls games that are, you know, like meant to be played first person. It's kind of an older over the shoulder view instead of just like that zoomed back MMO style way zoomed out view. But still, it can be played in first person, and I did check it out in first person. Both felt just like an Elder Scrolls game should be. And you know, you go into a room and you can, like, pick up everything if you want to. You talk to people and they have huge conversations about this and that, and a lot of it is irrelevant. It's just to, like, build the world and this huge world that you can just explore. And it's not, at least in the demo that I got my hands on, it wasn't the usual MMO crap of, like, hey, go kill five of these, bring back a wolf pelt or two, and then I'll graduate you and you'll kill bears instead. No, it wasn't that at all. Like, the first quest I went on, and I want to say it was pretty early, but I guess I can't really tell. I had to don a disguise, a bandit disguise, and then infiltrate this bandit camp, and I totally screwed it up. So I walked in there for, like, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 feet, and then they found out that I was, I must have went into a building I wasn't supposed to. They found out that I was not a bandit, and they started chasing me. And there were a lot of bandits, and there was only one of me, so I started getting scared and running away. And then, like, you know, the perfect emergent gameplay that comes both with Elder Scrolls games and with MMOs, you know, these things are kind of melding. And just as I was about to die, and I'm just getting beaten down by these bandits, I'm on the edge of their camp, there's like four of them after me, two other players that were playing in the same area that I was come crashing in and just destroy these bandits with me. And it was a real great feeling that I don't get that much in MMOs. Most people are like, you know, I'm out there doing their own thing. They're not going to help each other, especially early on in the game. You can handle everything by yourself. I really liked that feeling in this game of, like, the early game of an MMO isn't just steamrolling everything until you're big and strong enough to tackle the real stuff in the game. You're not just trying to get a bunch of money and a bunch of experience right away. So yeah, that actually felt good. It looked beautiful. Good gosh. It doesn't look, from what I could see, it doesn't look like they've really, it doesn't look like they've had to cut back on the graphics to make this an online thing. It was gorgeous. I didn't get too much time with it, but just that little experience was enough to even get me excited. And I was playing on a PC, so I can't talk about like how it works on consoles or anything, because that bad boy's coming to consoles, right? Yeah. But the only reason I'm not going to play it is because that damn thing's a subscription model, and I'm not paying subscription fees for anything anymore. Sorry. I canceled my Netflix long ago. There's no way you're giving it to Elder Scrolls. Anyway, that's pretty sweet. Some of the other stuff that I checked out, let's just make my way across the show floor. My game that was my game of the show for a very, very long time was Transistor. I thought Transistor was incredible. Transistor being from Supergiant Games, the guys that brought us Bastion. Oh, can't say enough good things. It kind of has kind of like that similar gorgeous art style, right? How it almost looks like hand-drawn. Everything is just wonderful, but in a different setting. You're playing as this girl with there's that same narrator's there, that same guy. He was actually at the booth, great dude. But he does have a different voice. He's not that same voice. It's similar, but now the voice is actually in your sword. The sword is speaking to you. So it feels kind of like Bastion. Just in the way it's kind of set up and the narration and like the overhead view and the way you're traversing the world. The part that's different is the combat, and that's something I was really kind of worried about at first, because Bastion, I liked it a lot. I didn't really care for the combat. It wasn't good, it wasn't bad, it was just kind of normal, like, hack-and-slashy stuff, but that's why I wasn't there. I was there for the atmosphere. This time, from all the previews and things that I've seen, all the gameplay trailers, it looked a lot more, like, tactical, like, turn-based-y, and I hate that. Most of the time, it, you know, the stop, decide what you're gonna do, and then go, similar to, like, how way back Knights of the Old Republic, for instance, had that, where you didn't have to play it real time. You could stop and then pick what you're going to do and then do it, execute. And I thought I was going to hate it, but man, did they do a good job. It feels very real time. And apparently I was talking to Greg Kasavin, the creator of it, guy who used to work at GameSpot. He says, like, a lot of times he even plays it, just completely in real time, doesn't even use the stopping stuff. And me, who I thought I would use it in real time, I was using the stop and tactical approach, like, the whole time. And it's really cool how it does it. Just once your sword kind of, like, recharges, it reaches, like, this recharge state, you hit a button, and then everything kind of freezes. And you have, like, so many, I don't know if it's so many steps or so many moves to execute, I didn't really get the details. But you move, say, like, behind an enemy because you get more damage by hitting them in the back. And then you decide which move to hit. There are different moves, you know, based on, you know, what you assign to, like, the face buttons. You, like, do that move, and you move to another area, and then do that move again, maybe on the same enemy, maybe on a different one. And then sometimes, you know, if you do the right two different moves in a row, you'll get, like, a combo bonus for, like, damage and stuff. But eventually, once your, I don't know if it's energy or, well, like I said, steps, whatever, drains, You hit a button to execute it, and then you kind of like rewind, go to your original spot, and then you do that move really, really fast, and you just destroy this enemy. And if you want to just keep using that move, then you just run around, kind of evade them around the world, and then do it again. And it's so satisfying when like you have all these enemies or like a big strong enemy or something like chasing you down. You're hiding behind a pillar, and then all of a sudden you just freeze time, set up this amazing slash behind them, this amazing explosive thing, and then execute it, and just boom, you win. It's a real satisfying combat system. It feels very natural. The demo was probably no more than 10 minutes at most, and it took me like a second to pick up on this combat system, which is what I was afraid of, that there was going to be so much depth that it was, you know, going to be more excluding than the easy button masher of Bastion was. But no, I had a blast with it. I had a real blast with it. That was my game of the show for days. I was trying to stay away from The Wolf Among Us because I thought that would be my automatic game of the show that would beat Transistor, because Transistor was one of the first things I played. If you don't know, Wolf Among Us is the next project that Telltale Games is working on. Originally known for their, you know, point and click 3D games, but more famously known for The Walking Dead that came out last year, won all these Game of the Year awards, and now it looks like they shifted all of their design to games that are like The Walking Dead. And I love The Walking Dead so very much. Said even you know, after it was it, I played it, that I would play any single story made in this style, and The Wolf Among Us is no different. I didn't want to play it because you know those games are not based on mechanics at all. That's not the point of them. It is the story, so I didn't really want to get anything spoiled. But I kind of caved because their booth looked so cool, like a Disney like ride. It was like this apartment building complex all almost, and it had like ads and things posted on it, like a wrecked apartment complex in New York or something. I don't know. It's really cool. But anyway, The Wolf Among Us is based on another comic book series like The Walking Dead was. This one's called Fables. They probably don't have Fables in the title because they don't want Peter Molyneux to sue them or something. But anyway, so the premise of this whole thing is there are fairy tale creatures like Little Red Riding Hood or the Big Bad Wolf, things like that, and they're living in New York. They're able to live in New York City, disguised as humans with the use of magic. And it is your job as the Big Bad Wolf to make sure they don't kill each other and that they don't, show any human New Yorkers that they are indeed fairy tale creatures. And so this quick demo started off with you, the Big Bad Wolf, looking like a normal person out there, answering a call from this toad, I guess. I don't really know who he was, who called in a complaint about one of the creatures, in this case, the Woodsman. I think it's, yeah, from that same Little Red Riding Hood story, the Woodsman that kills the Big Bad Wolf. And so you go there, and at first you're just, like, bickering with the toad because he doesn't have his human skin on, because apparently you have to, like, buy this magic, and this toad is broke, and so you're giving him hell. And, you know, it's the same good old Walking Dead style where you're having these hard conversation choices to make. Like, do you show this guy forgiveness? Do you yell at this toad? And then the toad's like, oh, come on, what about my family and things? And then, like, if you play hardball like I did, he's like, oh, the toad will remember that. And it just gives you that extra little ping in the corner just to make you feel guilty no matter what you did. And I love that feeling. I love that emotion that the Telltale throws in there. But anyway, you eventually get upstairs, and the Woodsman is, because this game is dark as hell and, mature as hell, the Woodsman's like beating up a prostitute. It's terrible. But then you come in there and you break it up and you're trying to figure out what's going on, but this Woodsman's like drunk, so he's not really talking to you, and this prostitute's pissed off because this Woodsman didn't pay her. So you're just trying to knock some sense into him, and then he's about to like he's trying to tell her, like, oh, I'm the Woodsman, don't you know who I am and stuff, and that's a big no-no. So then, like, there's this huge combat thing, which kind of felt like the combat in The Walking Dead. It lasted a long time, longer than any of the fights did in The Walking Dead, which I don't know how I felt about at first, because the combat was the worst part of The Walking Dead. I think almost everybody would agree with that. But I had fun with it, and it was a little more involved. I don't really remember if they did this with The Walking Dead, but it was more than just, like, pushing buttons or mashing buttons. There was, like, times where, like, you had to punch the Woodsman in the face, but in order to do that, there'd be, like, a circle on the screen. Then you'd have to, like, pull that circle on with like an analog stick over onto the woodsman's face, and then throw, then hit like right trigger and throw a punch. So, you know, that's how you, how you'd have to do it. It was a little more involved. Still, I hope the game isn't so fighty. I hope they were just trying to show that, because, you know, so they could show different types of the style of the game, the conversation, and then the action. But again, the story was just so well delivered that they were showing here. The voice acting is amazing. You know, they're not afraid to get gory. They're not afraid to take on some serious topics. And unlike The Walking Dead, I feel like this game has a different style. A very different style, and a much more flashier style. I think it's supposed to take place in the 80s or something like that, but it's much more colorful, and everything kind of pops in a way that it didn't in you know, that desolate wasteland that is The Walking Dead after the world has pretty much died. So it's kind of like neon, super colorful like that, and you feel powerful, right? You feel powerful in a way that, you know, this is the opposite of The Walking Dead. You know, with The Walking Dead, you didn't, like, that was the point of, like, just of, like, you know, modern zombie is the point of it is not, you know, fighting zombies. The point of it is, you know, feeling vulnerable when everything you've known has been taken away from you and you're struggling to survive in this post-apocalyptic world. Flip that. Now you've got The Wolf Among Us, where you're a total badass, just like able to take blows, and just your job is to control these asshole fairy tale creatures. Get it done. And so, you know, taking out this woodsman felt really good. So maybe that'll be a reason why the combat will just feel better than in The Walking Dead, if nothing else, just because it makes more sense for who your character is. So yeah, Wolf Among Us was real great. I would still say Transistor was at the top of my list even after playing that, but it did feel real good. Before we go indies though, I want to go to Nintendo. Another early thing that I got my hands on was Super Mario 3D World. This is a game that I criticized when it first was announced, because I was hoping for another evolution in our 3D Marios, kind of like Galaxy was another evolution. Not necessarily we had to go even farther than Galactic, like, physically, but it just looked like something different. It played like something different than, you know, Sunshine before it. And while I liked Sunshine better, I could still very much appreciate Galaxy. And Super Mario 3D World almost felt like a step back, you know, kind of like a sequel to that handheld game. Super Mario 3D Land, I believe it was. Man, is it a joy to play, and I was not expecting that at all. I didn't even play Galaxy 2, like, I haven't played the 3D one on 3DS, I've just kind of been burned out on Mario, but man, putting on that, I played a level with that cat suit, you might have seen it, it just looks so damn cute, and you get your little claws, and you're scraping up Goombas, and it allows you to climb up walls a lot easier, and really, I believe the 3D one on 3DS feels, it feels like a perfect meld of, I don't know if meld is a word, it feels like a perfect meshing, that might be right, a blend, let's go use blend, it feels like a perfect blend of the 3D and the 2D Marios, the 2D in the sense that the levels are kind of small, kind of self-contained, feel a lot more, like there's a lot more platforming, don't exactly feel like a big expansive world, it's very much like a get from point A to point B, jump on a lot of platforms, do a lot more precision and things like that. But it just looks gorgeous. You're in HD, and you know, you do use the full range of 3D. And I left it with just I was playing the whole game with a smile on my face and wasn't even thinking about it till it was over. Like, wow, that was the most damn charming thing I've played in a long, long time. And if nothing else, Nintendo still knows how to give us charming stuff. So that was a real good thing. The other thing that I played from Nintendo that really stood out was Not Wonderful 101, which, you know, is about to be released and is getting mixed reviews, and I don't know, that game's weird. But I want to talk about Legend of Zelda: A Link Between Worlds. That the name of it? I want to assume that's the name of it. I could be wrong. I've been saying that for a while, but that sounds right. We're gonna say that. Might be a sequel, I think, maybe, to A Link to the Past. I think someone at one point might have said, hey, this is a sequel to A Link to the Past. I don't know if that's canon. Anyway, it is a 3D Zelda game on, visually 3D, I guess, but, you know, still, the old, like in the vein of the old 2D Zelda games on handhelds, and, I was realizing as I was playing it, this feels really good. Why does it feel so good to control Link this way? You know, you're playing on your 3DS with... I was like, is it because you have an analog stick, and is that why it feels so good? No, dang it. It's because the last Zelda game on a handheld that I played was Phantom Hourglass, which I really liked. But there's just something so much more precise about controlling Link with an analog stick instead of using the stylus. Like, it just feels right. And so you're exploring this world, and I played both a dungeon bit and an overworld bit, and it's a pretty game. It's a really colorful, pretty game, and it just feels, like I said again, it just feels right, because, I mean, the last, I think the last Zelda game that we had in a handheld that wasn't, one of those stylus controlled was, must have been, like, Minish Cap back then, and I even felt that, like, that Minish Cap wasn't as, I just feel like you didn't have much control, and maybe that was because of the D-pad nature of it. And if you go even farther back, you know, you're on, like, Game Boy Color and stuff, and in those, Link can only face, like, four different directions. But here, you just have full control of where you want to hit, where you want to shoot your arrows, all of that stuff. And so I'm just, like, exploring this world, and then I go into a dungeon, and man, the dungeons, they're taking advantage of that 3D like I've never seen. And it's great. It makes me sad for anyone that buys a 2DS, because this game is going to be, if not more difficult, at least more confusing, for sure. Because this game plays with the 3D so much, and it looks gorgeous. The dungeon, at least that I was in, had a ton of verticality. I probably scaled like 10 floors by the time this dungeon was over. And you know, you'll take out your hammer, you'll smash down these things in the floor, step on them, and you'll be springed up right out of the screen and land on a floor above. And it's got a real good feeling to it. It's fun. It's just fun to do stuff like that. And then it came to a part where I was outside riding a platform, and I completely forgot that the whole other hook of this game, other than being, you know, maybe a sequel to the greatest Legend of Zelda game, depending on who you ask of all time, was the whole mechanic of jumping into walls, turning into a picture. I didn't get any narrative context as to why Link can do this, but it didn't matter, because this was fun. And it was real simple to do. Push of a button, hit A as you're close to a wall, you turn into a painting on that wall, and you can move around. And I'm glad, because I didn't want to be mad at, like, any angry platforming moments when you had to, like, split second do this, and it wasn't easy to do. No, it was awesome. Like, you're riding a platform, you're about to run into a wall, for instance, and you know, you'll get pushed off the platform. Nope, you just smash into the wall, go around it, turn back into regular 3D Link, and you're okay. Yeah, a lot of cool stuff that they're doing with that. Like, say, like, there's a platform going up and down, Link is too short to jump on top of this platform, you just turn into a picture on the wall, ride it up, and then jump off when it's at the high point. It's great. So yeah, the game looks great, plays great. It's a Legend of Zelda game, guys. Get excited. Get more excited than Wind Waker, which, although that's a good game, and although that's beautiful, it already was. We already had it. Come on, Wii U. Let's do something here. Let's do something. Give us another Wind Waker. Why couldn't you do that? Anyway, did not get my hands on the new Assassin's Creed. People say that is a lot better, but I have been out of Assassin's Creed for a long time, so I wouldn't even be able to tell you what the improvements were. I think we're going to finish this off with the indies, because those are the only other things that really stood out to me, despite every other thing that I played. A couple of indies that stood out over everything else. One of them, we'll start with the one that was, I'm not going to say least impressive, because these indies are incredible. Anyway, there's a game called Scale. Really cool. You guys should check it out. Imagine, like, the Unfinished Swan, Portal, and something else. I don't know what else, but something else. Just imagine you mix all those together. And that's kind of what it is. That tells you nothing, so I'll get into it. It's a first-person game. You're running around in this real colorful world, and you eventually get this cool scale gun. And the scale gun allows you to, hello, scale items to solve puzzles. So they can be as simple as, okay, you have this object, there's a gate in front of you, and on the other side of this gate, there's a pressure pad that needs something heavy to be put on it, so this gate will open. Well, in order to do that, you shrink down an object that you have on your size, fit it through those gate bars, put it on top of the scale, and then make it huge again. Whoa, now the gate opens. Cool, simple, but, you know, kind of a straightforward puzzle. Other puzzles that are nuts. Okay, there's a giant house. Inside this house is a dollhouse. You go in the house, you take out the dollhouse, and then you shrink the big house. and then you make the little dollhouse giant, and then you go in the dollhouse, which is now giant, carrying the little house, which you shrunk, and you put it in the same place as it was sitting in the big house, you know, when they're opposite. This is sounding so confusing, but then it opens a door, and then you get your thing. It's amazing, and it's set up kind of like Super Mario 64 is, where you're given an, like, you go into, like, you jump into a certain world, and then there are certain objectives that you can hit if you want. You choose, like, which, I think it's like a crystal or a shard or something that you're going to go after, kind of like the stars in, like, Super Mario 64, Galaxy, any of those, and you're like, okay, I'll do this one. Say it's the one with the house, and then it kind of shows you, like, where you need to be and stuff, and then you just go after it, and you try to solve whatever puzzle is keeping you from getting at this shard or whatever they are. Pretty cool, pretty sweet game. Dude seems like a genius that is behind it. Just these puzzles are crazy. He was just showing us how to solve them, and brilliant stuff that I never would think of, and it sounds like he's running out of money, and he's going to be doing a Kickstarter soon, so make sure you keep your eyes out for that, and help him out if you can, if you think it looks cool, because I want to see this game get made. Another thing, this ended up winning my game of the show for me. It beat Transistor, it beat The Wolf Among Us. It was insane. The Stanley Parable. Because I'm a sucker for this sort of stuff. It was another first-person narrative game. Think things like Dear Esther, more recently something like Gone Home, where all it really is to do is walk around and interact with stuff. Doesn't seem at this point like there's, you know, anything to shoot, any gun you're gonna get, anything like that. But because this game is so narrative driven, the creators of it made a demo specifically for PAX, right? It's a demo that only exists at PAX. I think they're gonna release kind of like an altered version online, but they didn't want to give away any of the story, so they made a complete thing separate from the game just for the show, and it's hilarious. Like I said, you know, I was mentioning those other games, Gone Home, Dear Esther. I was only mentioning them for style. When you're thinking of what this game design actually feels like, it's much more like Portal 2. The parts of Portal 2 where you're not solving puzzles, where you're just exploring, discovering, and getting that Wheatley, getting that commentation. Commentation? Is that a word? I don't know. Narration is probably a better one. Because in this, you go into this area, and you walk in, and there's like TVs on the wall, and they turn on, and they're like, hi, welcome to the PAX Prime demo. Like, it's completely fourth wall breaking and stuff, and they're like, we're going to show you how we make a demo before we play it. And you go in, and it's like this factory, and they're like pretending this is how they make a demo. And you walk in, and there's like a bunch of these jokes, like you're like, the wall area, and you walk into this door, and it's like, we just made a wall that's that you can actually walk through. Go out and try it. And you try to walk through this wall and you can't. And they're like, oh, that one must be still in development. And it's just all these jokes everywhere. And then you go into this other one and it's like the emotion room. You go into this little tube and it's like, you want to learn despair. And then the lights turn red and they start saying all these things that would make you sad. And it's just, it was so tongue-in-cheek. And the jokes were just again and again and again. And they just hit you so good. Like, there seemed to, like, to be this running theme of, like, their rivalry with Octodad, because Octodad is, like, the indie game that everyone's talking about, and so at this one point, they're like, all right, let's get to the demo, and all of a sudden, this room opens, and it's, like, all this advertising for Octodad, and it's, like, IGN says Octodad is the best, and stuff like that. Oh, it was great. It was great, and it just broke so many fourth walls, and you just got, like, behind the scenes of behind the scenes, and despite what I said about Super Mario 3D World, I wasn't smiling nearly as much at anything else combined as much as I was during this specific demo for this game, which blows my mind. It was incredible, incredible. I want this game to go far, and I will play it the instant it comes out. I think that's coming out later this year. And then the final thing of note, I can't end on this, but I'm going to have to. The final thing of note, something that you should keep your eyes on, there's this game called That Dragon Cancer. That Dragon, there's a comma, cancer. We're talking about cancer. Very short demo. Apparently it's coming to Ouya first. Crazy. Ouya exclusive in this day and age. And didn't give you much control. Another first-person game, Another, you know, narration-based game. I was coming from Stanley Parable after this, you know, enjoying that so much that I wanted more of that. You know, like I said, I just played Gone Home, and that was one of the best games I played ever. And so I'm really into this, you know, the story-driven, bare-bones mechanic stuff. So I was like, sweet, I see another one. Let's do it. So I jumped in there, and it's this story about... One of the creators has a, I believe, 4-year-old son that has brain cancer. And he made this game to try to express and get out how he's been feeling through the whole thing. And if that isn't the saddest thing you've ever heard in your life, I pity you, because you've been through some shit. So this game, you were playing as him. As this game creator in the hospital while your kid's there, and you just look around and, like, you know, click in a different place, or I guess push a button because it was on Ouya, but like there'd be these like context points where it's like, okay, there's one by the window, and they'd move to the window, and then you'd kind of look out, and then his narration would start, like an internal monologue of like how he's feeling through everything. And then, you know, hitting certain points would kind of advance the narration once you'd gone through certain areas. And eventually your kid wakes up and starts crying. And then you're having this internal monologue, like, of just desperation of, I want to help you, but I can't. Right? Because as much as, you know, I can't speak from experience, but I imagine, like, you're a dad and you see your kid in anguish. You want to do whatever you can to help him. Like, you're supposed to be his superhero. You're supposed to be able to, you know, save him. And there's nothing you can do except wait and hope that the doctors figure something out. And so your kid's crying, and you try to, like, you know, like feed him a juice box, for instance, and he just slaps it away. And then you feed him another one, and he drinks it down. And you're you know, I'm just feeling so good, just because... despite all these bad things, one little thing helped, and one little thing went okay, and then he pukes it up, and then it's just all downhill again, and then the baby's crying for more food, but you can't give it to him because he's just going to puke it up anyway. And no game has so quickly put me into just that low of an emotional state. Being that invested in a character and a situation in such a short time. Again, this is like less than a 10-minute demo, and I was almost in tears. The person that was playing it before me actually was in tears. Apparently, he had lost his mom to cancer, and would just left just distraught. And I kind of left in the same way. I actually left the show floor after playing this game because I was so racked. I couldn't go from playing that to, like, I don't know, playing Hotline Miami, or, you know, going and killing a million people, or, you know, going into something, you know, mindless. It was something else. It's like To the Moon. It's not a game that leaves you like, To the Moon, it's a game that I know is going to leave me in tears. But it was weird when I was trying to talk to the developers. It was like, I can't tell you that I enjoyed your game, because that's just the wrong word. And I was telling them that I don't have a word for how I felt here. I appreciate everything that you've done here, and I love what you've been able to do. But, like, man, it's something else. And that's why I love this medium. That's why I love video games, is because they are able to do this stuff that I can't do anywhere else. I can't pick up a book and read for 10 minutes and be in tears. I can't. And as much as Pixar tries, I can't watch 10 minutes of a movie and be in tears. It's closer there. It's closer on that end, but I can't. I never have. But this game is, if they would have had me for 5 more minutes, I would have been done. I would have been down and out, and I would have been teary-eyed. I mean, I almost was. I could feel the water glands building up. And that's why I love these kinds of games. That's why I've been so into these narrative experiences, because when this next gen's coming, even though this stuff isn't next gen, it's completely indie, but with this next gen coming, I've seen, like, the same old shit. And it's not shit. Titanfall is not shit. Infamous is not shit. Don't take this out of context. But I've seen this other this stuff coming that doesn't look like anything different. It's prettier, sure. They probably have more particles, and they can make a coat flap in the wind better than you can on your PS3. But it looks like more of an iteration than an evolution. It doesn't seem... I mean, it's very, like, step by step of, like, wow, we couldn't do this next step before, so we're going to do it now. Whereas, you know, some stuff like this, like the Stanley Parable, like The Wolf Among Us, it's doing stuff that's different. It's doing stuff that video games have never done before. And that's why I'm so into it. That's why I'm so into these video games. But I, you know, again, what else that I love about video games is you don't have to be into that. If you don't want to burst into tears by playing a game, you don't have to. If you want to go in there and just fight people and, you know, just kill your friends a million times over, like, you can, and no one's gonna get mad at you for it. It's great. And so, if nothing else, love video games for that, right? Be open to everything and love that there are so many different experiences for everything. I mean, I was at PAX Prime primarily for this stuff, but it was so great to be in an area where there was something for literally everybody. I mean, there were people that went there and they didn't do anything but sit on beanbags and play 3DSs with their friends and with other people they just met. It was cool. There are other people that went there and played board games. That's what they did the whole time. They were like, okay, sweet, I'll play this board game with you, and then I'll meet some other people. We'll play board games together. It'll be the coolest thing ever. Other people went there whole time. They watched other people play League of Legends. That's it. They sat and they talked and watched people playing League of Legends like some four-day Super Bowl. Crazy. And, you know, then there were the people like me that actually wanted to play the video games, that wanted to talk to the developers and see what was going on and just really get into the indie scene. And it's... Video games are crazy. It's insane how wide our spectrum is of experiences that we can really touch anybody. That this industry is what this industry is capable of is, it just blows my mind. And I can only hope that I know we will, because of this burgeoning indie scene, where we're not, you know, held to what a publisher tells us, where we're not held to what's going to sell only 5 million or more copies and we're not going to make anything else. They're allowed to explore, you know, different ways of storytelling, different ways of gameplay, different ways of, you know, either having fun or just giving you a specific experience, nailing it down, and allowing there to be something for everybody. That's what I love. So keep that in mind. Whatever you guys are doing in the future, when video games come, this next gen's going to come, and you're going to start yelling at each other about which console's better, trying to justify that purchase when all the launch games kind of suck. And just remember that everyone's out there for something different. No one is exactly like you and your tastes. Allow everybody to have fun, if that's what they want. Allow everybody to just have a good time. Be nice to people. This is me on my soapbox, trying to get the world a little more positive. Next time you're about to leave a pissed off comment, write it, look at it, and delete it. It's satisfying enough. You don't have to yell at somebody. You don't have to call somebody an idiot. You don't have to threaten somebody's parents. You don't have to threaten somebody's life. Just over something as is inconsequential as somebody else liked something more than you do. I didn't mean for this to turn into like a soapboxy thing, but now I'm getting emotional because I played that Dragon Cancer. But yeah, like I said, this is weird episode. We'll be back to our normal stuff, not this weekend, but the weekend after that. Again, subscribe on iTunes. We're The Game Plan on there by gamers-association.com. I am Luke Frazier. You can follow me at Luke A. Frazier. I'm going to have a lot of on Gamers Association. I'm going to have a lot of previews coming up. Hopefully, I'll get a lot of those up before I go away for the weekend. If not, they will hit the site early next week. Previews of pretty much everything I played that isn't out by the time I post the previews, if that makes sense. So, yeah, you can check all of that cool stuff out there. And, yeah, with that, I think we're done. You guys have a nice week, a nice weekend, and thanks for checking out Gamers Association. Really appreciate it, guys.